Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Likeable Lou.
I'm not even sure what you said. It just completely Likeable Lou. Okay.
Yeah.
It had dropped out for a little bit, and I was like, "Oh God, the mystery is so much stronger right now."
Oh my. Yeah, but, hopefully this episode will go all right, because it seems like we're having a little bit of internet issues, but it should be fine. Welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I don't know if we've ever given people the update, so maybe we should real fast.
Sure.
One is Lou moved to Orange County. I think we've talked about that previously.
A little bit. I think it's been like mentioned.
How is Orange County?
To be honest, it's surprisingly not that big of a deal to move out here than I thought it would be. A good example of this would be the two of us work from home, but realistically, I think I only had to meet with my clients like in person on their turf, maybe once or twice a week at most. So instead of paying, you know, a lot for an apartment out there or something of that nature, it is actually a little bit cheaper to live out here. You don't actually had to drive that much. If you leave at the right time, you're only 30 minutes away, depending what part of LA you're looking to go to, but you can get to downtown in 30 minutes. But like the other day I drove to North Hollywood.
Is it cleaner out there?
Significantly. It's Disney money. Let's put it that way. Disney has a lot of investments throughout the city to the point where even the parks out here are surprisingly clean. Like I've been working a lot of these events, called Concerts in the Park. A friend of mine, actually, you know, I'm Shaq. He invited me to help out with the company that he's working with. Just, you know, putting on events throughout the city and all that. It's quick, easy money, clock in, clock out kind of gig. But, it's actually really funny because you go to these parks and you're like, dude, I've never seen parks this nice or clean in LA.
Nice.
Yeah. But it's also weirdly cheaper to live out here, to the point where you're like, you know, considering the amount of gas you're supposedly going to spend, it's actually not that much, because if you're working remotely on most of what you do, you don't actually have to, you know, you don't really need a car that much. I mean, actually, that's a good testament to you. I mean, how much did you really have to use your car?
I don't. Not at all. Yeah, like when we go grocery shopping, it's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, moving to Orange County, I thought was going to be a little more of an impact. I think the biggest impact I had was a little bit comedic, which was I got a bunch of DMs from people saying like, "Hey, dude, did you quit?" And I'm like, "What? No, what the hell? Why would you think I quit? Oh, you moved out of LA." I'm like, I mean, don't get me wrong, but people live in Chatsworth. People live in Santa Clarita. Like, some people just see the value of going somewhere a little bit cheaper, a little bit quieter, so they can get out of the city for a little bit, you know, and they just travel or commute to work. It's kind of a very common thing to do in almost any industry, but they don't necessarily quit their industry when they move.
Yeah. The other announcement that we wanted to make also officially, it's been like seven, almost 8 months now, but we closed down in the mix studio in January. So December, January, in the mix studio, we closed down. Long story short, We were doing well. We had a great team. And that was probably the biggest, the saddest part is letting go of the interns and the teams and the basically like the fraternity that was built there.
Literally.
The brotherhood, the brother and sisterhood, the siblinghood. And it was really great. It was, our lease was up. We were talking about evaluating our personal goals. Lou and I were evaluating our personal goals. And to be quite frank, we were making some money, but not enough money to change our career directions. I want to be a mixer. Lou wants to do studio design, building, and some and mixing mastering as well. So at the end of the day, I wasn't getting paid enough from the studio to switch over to being a studio manager. And yeah, that was it. And it was like Lou, you've had some big projects going on, and then I also had some big projects mixing wise going on. And instead of looking to renew our lease, we just let it go. So it's not a sad thing. It's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean we're broke. In fact, if anything, it means the opposite.
It's kind of funny. We have significantly less overhead and significantly less tied to need to cover that overhead. If that makes sense, like,
and less stress.
But I did get that question, funny enough. I got a call the other day. They're like, hey, man, you know, I wanted to book the studio out for a week. I'm like, hey, man, I've got a great studio for you. It's owned by my friend OT. And, you know, it's great space. It's a fair price, kind of like how we were. And, you know, they'll be able to get you taken care of. It's like, why can't I record with you? Did I do something wrong? I'm like, no, we just don't have our space anymore.
Yeah, we closed down. We don't want people to think is that, like, the business failed.
Yeah.
I guess the way that it did was that it wasn't fulfilling. That was, like, the biggest thing for me. Because, like, it was enough money to keep going easily, but it wasn't enough money for me to become a studio manager. Because it turned out, like, the bigger that the operation was getting, the more team members that we had, the more clients that we had, the more that Lou and I became involved as studio managers. Not as engineers, but, like, me doing taxes, me doing the accounting, me figuring out how not to get scammed by idiots. And, like, you know, like...
the amount of customer support you...
Customer
and
support
scheduling
service.
And everything you would, oh, my God.
Overnight security. So it's like, it turned out that most of my time was going into things that were not at all related to what I really love, which is audio, right? Music and audio. And it ended up being, as much as I loved the interns there, it wasn't paying enough for me to transition my career over managing a bunch of 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
And babysitting artists, you know? So this just wasn't my vibe. My schedule is a lot more flexible as a mixer. I make more money as a mixer. And then there's less overhead, probably because there's less overhead as a mixer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that we could talk about. We could talk about in a future episode. It's about that. Like, we've mentioned before in the past, in previous episodes about owning the studios, like the things to look out for is we've mentioned, that in LA, it's different. Like in Utah, I was the studio owner and the head engineer. That was my space. That was my office. But here it was like, I'm renting out an office for other people to use and hopefully they don't fuck up my shit. Like, and that's like, that's a totally different game.
If you've ever been to the studio, if you've ever seen it, you know the quality of gear that we actually put into there. Everything from tube techs to stressors, DBX, PMCs, ATCs at different points. We had, what was it, Quested and all that. We had NS10s at one point. And the funny thing is, like, every time a session came in where you kind of knew that somebody wasn't necessarily used to being around such a caliber of gear, you kind of had to give them the basic rundown of how not to break it because maybe they weren't working with a team member or something of that nature. We had overnight sessions that, you know, wouldn't actually be a session once in a while. One of the funny things is you'd find clients who literally just needed a place to book from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. just crash. And you're like, did you really book an engineer just to, like, sit there? You know, but, you know, as fun as it was, there were different stresses that come with it that aren't necessarily something you would deal with if you're just booking out a space for you to engineer. you know, when you have your own studio for you to engineer, there's definitely a very different approach than if you have a space that you're managing, booking out with the intention of commercial use.
Yeah, that's true. And I think we had a really good run. It was fun. What I don't want people to being like is like saying things like DMing us, emailing us, be like, hey, that's so like sad. Or like, yeah. I'm sorry that that happened. No, it's like, it's actually a good thing. This is a good change of our direction, reanalyzing our goals and our incentives.
And I know this is that, kind of funny because it sounds like we're also like trying to justify a breakup with like a toxic ex. We're like, no, it's better now.
Oh yeah, I don't want to come off like that. That's kind of the vibe. I know. I don't want people to be like, oh, like I was listening to the podcast and that was such a big deal. I wanted to intern for you guys and then you closed down. Like, I don't want to disappoint those people.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking about. But it was a really great run. It was really fun. I'm glad we did it. There's no regrets there. But I'm also very glad that we moved on past that. Especially after like reanalyzing what we wanted to do. That was the biggest thing, is like I didn't want to give up being a mixer. And it was like, it was getting to the point where I had to pick.
Yeah.
Anyway, so talking about that, this is, we're going to go into the episode. That was just an announcement that went a little bit long. And we could do an entire episode about that. But today's episode is going to be an interesting topic, something that I've been thinking about this last week, based on a comment that I was, based on some comments that I'd heard, based on some advice that I've been hearing. I think we all have some baseline understanding of the importance of attention to detail. And not just our jobs, not just our, like, in music, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, even in something like, if I go to a car wash and there's, like, a hand washing place or, like, a car detailer, right? Like, I want them to have attention to detail. The car mechanic, you know, even, like, a plumber that comes and fixes our toilet or something like that.
Oh, my God. If you're an electrician and you don't have detail in your work, I am scared for my life.
Yeah, like, and there's things, there's different careers and different jobs where attention to detail is it's life or death. It's very important. Even someone that's like enjoys coffee making as a hobby, it's the guy with attention to detail of exactly how many grams goes into the espresso, into that double basket, and then how many grams comes out of the grinder, and how many seconds, and how many bars, you know, of pressure there is in the puck there or whatever. And that's like, it's all about attention to detail. And I'm going to try to do my best to explain this, but I want this episode for us, Lou. I want to talk about the importance in our jobs, like in our career, of attention to detail and how that applies to us as mixers, as audio engineers, potentially as producers.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, because we do something so subjective like music, how do we balance attention to detail with just maximizing our time and our efforts? For example, like we could spend 20 hours automating every single letter, note, syllable, consonant, vowel of every single lyric, of every single background vocal. We could be doing that. But the amount of returns on spending that time to do that, where every hour that we spend doing that is just less hour money that we're making per hour because we're usually charging by project. So finding the balance practically from a business perspective of balancing, maximizing profits, maximizing time, being effective, efficient, and attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
Lou, why don't you start us off? What do you think?
Sure. I think a really good example of this topic is just the idea of like some mixers claim that they can mix a song in like an hour to 2 hours. But I think that's something that comes with practice. I think that this topic kind of revolves around the idea that like if you're somebody that's actively busy, having to turn around a lot of deadlines, you get used to having to work fast, right? But fast doesn't mean that it has to be sloppy. Sometimes actually a good example is just like a competition show. You see like a seasoned professional in whatever industry, we'll just say like a cooking show, right? They have attention to detail to how they're cooking things, because if they undercook a fish, then it's bad for you. You can't really eat it. And that's going to work against them in the long run, because they're all trying to compete for a top shot. As mixers, we are trying to make sure that the quality of the product is actually audibly great, but it's also creatively still in the same pocket that the artist is looking to, you know, present to the public. Now, if we start doing too much, if we start overcooking the bass, overcooking the kick and stuff like that, the vocals are now starting to get really saturated, because we're just saying, oh, add saturation. We're not paying attention to how we're driving it, what type of saturation we're using, and if we want to use it across the board or if we want to use it on a very selective band. You know, these little details are things that you kind of get better at doing quickly if you start putting some pressure on deadlines for yourself. But you could actually, you know, take your time, go slow with it at first, you know, try to learn the differences and everything. But you have to learn to become a little more decisive, because once again, we're battling time, whether that means trying to maximize your dollar per hour or trying to hit your deadlines.
You almost brought up something. You almost went in a different direction that I think was valid, too. You talked about doing too much and the dangers of changing a mix too much after the vision has already been presented in a specific way that the artist and the producer like, right?
Yeah.
And that's interesting, because then that turns into a topic of potentially attention to detail is a negative thing, and changing too many things is a negative thing. And then we're also talking about how it is practical, pragmatic, in our customers' best interests for us to spend less time on a song.
Yeah.
So like, not only are we making more money, but we're potentially making the client happier too. And so that's a whole nother topic that like you were kind of brushing up on. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting direction. I thought you were going to go in that direction.
Well, a little bit with back. The cooking reference, you know.
Yeah. But you were talking about being quick in order to make better decisions that are more in line with taste rather than technique.
Yeah.
And I think that that's super valid too. Like, I want to start there, go there. I do, like, where is the line for you, Lou? Like, where is the line where it's like, oh, I'm doing way too much? Not from, like,
If I ever liked the reference more than I like my own mix, I've clearly done too much. That's definitely
yeah, but that's more of
one.
Like...
But I don't even mean about the mix. I'm talking about vibe. Like, how are the hi-hats grooving and stuff like that? If the vibe feels better in the original, that means you've over-engineered it. You know, you've overthought the process. But clearly on my end... I know that certain genres hold a certain sound, and I know that we all kind of create our own signature as we grow professionally. You know, some people just have smoother vocals, some people just have harder hitting kicks and stuff like that, and they kind of have these little signatures, but you kind of hear that sometimes in people's music. Like Hit-Boy always has great low end and kicks. They're always super punchy, and you always hear like a 3K dip on vocals. So I don't know who he's sending all of his mixes to, but I don't know if that's necessarily signature of the mixer, but it could be signature of the producer. And identifying these things is one of those things where it's like, it's attention to detail of who you're working with. Right. So for me, the line always goes back to who is it that hired me to work on the music, and what is it that the goal should be? You know, some people have a moving goalpost. They're still figuring out their sound. It's early in their career, but some people have a set goalpost where they've been doing this. They have a few albums out and they all kind of have a very uniform sound. They have a very uniform balance to their BGVs and everything. I try to base my goalpost on the artist that I'm working with. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just writing down some notes of things that you're mentioning that I want to talk about a little bit later.
Sure.
But yeah, moving goalposts. Okay. The thing that I want to talk about also, I want to emphasize, if you're an amateur that is doing this as a hobby, if you're a hobbyist, an amateur, just someone who loves the art and craft of audio and music, I think it's still worthwhile to point out that this topic is still valid to you. Because from a professional standpoint, we're talking about maximizing our dollars, but also making sure that people know that we're detail oriented, right?
Yeah.
And we have the best products. We create the best products on the market. But as an amateur, I think this is important too, because I think me and Lou correlate speed and our speed of work directly to the potential outcome and the quality of the end product. This is one of those few gigs where, yes, sure, at the beginning, it's going to be about how to use a compressor, how to use an EQ, how to use these various different tools, how to use saturation and what effects that can have, how to create loudness, perceived loudness, learning about the Fletcher Munson curves, learning about different things, right? Tonal balance, genre, cultures, era style mixing. These all of these factors are very important, but after you kind of have some sort of an idea of how to do most of these different techniques and different styles of mixing, and then it comes back down to 100% taste. It's just taste and personal preference. Especially if you're mixing your own music, then it is all the way through from the beginning of recording, songwriting to recording to production, to mixing, mastering, it is your personal taste. And this is really interesting because in anything in this in the world of like art or creative where there's not an objective goal, like we're not here to try to make a car, a fast car, right? We're here to make an art that people may or may not enjoy. But at least it should be cathartic to you, the creator, right? And if that's the case, the goal is not a level of quality of a product. It is about the amount of energy and emotion that translates from that product. And there is no linear crossover from attention to detail to emotional conversion. It's not linear. In fact, Lou and I, we talk about this often, we find that the correlation is the exact opposite. The more time that you put into a mix, the less objective you become, the less, mm-hmm. the more subjective you become, and then the more you lose a ton of inspiration, and now you're over-focusing on the frequencies of a snare and not on how this snare is impacting your soul. Does that make sense? And so it's like there is an actual danger to both the pro and the amateur with the goal of making music that emotes, that invokes a emotion within the listener or within just the creator, right? So it's like, I'm saying that weird, but I do think that it's important to recognize maximizing, becoming efficient, learning your DAW, becoming quick is all around the house super important to have a better song, a better mix, better workflow. That being said, Lou, the one thing that I'm thinking about is across the board, the one thing that is good for attention to detail is editing.
Yes.
Now, editing is super important. Like a lot of the song, especially for how much I charge, it's like this idea where like I charge a lot. The only people that hire me are people that are really serious about the craft and really serious about getting like high quality projects out in the world. And so by the time I get the files, they're probably already properly named. They're probably like, there's already a lot of attention to detail that's been going on throughout
the process.
There's
probably already a pretty good balance going on too.
There's already a probably good mix going on, pretty good balance going on. There's a great idea. The tracks are already edited. The vocals have been tuned already. They're already, everything's already time aligned. You know, these sort of, the editing's already been done. But I mean, when the few times that it's not, or when I was younger, when that was like most of my projects, is like the editing hadn't been taking place, what differentiated me as a mixer and like the other guy down the street was that I took the time and had the attention to detail to do those things. You know, you can say that it's the talent that I have and my ear that I had from being a singer that I can like really hear when something is just a vocal is just a few cents off, right? A little bit off. A quarter step off, you know, just kidding. But the idea is like, whatever it may be, the fact that I'm able to pick it up, that I'm able to pick up the distraction, pick out the distraction, that I'm able to fix the distraction and be able to take the time to do so is what differentiated me and created a better form of art. I think editing specifically is one of the few things that attention to detail is important. But when it comes to using EQ and compression, completely different.
Now, I feel like editing comes down to systems as well. If you have the ability to have an assistant at a certain point in your career, then a lot of times, you know, that's what's getting passed down to like an assistant. Like, hey, just make sure that we're not cutting, let's say, if a reverb was printed, make sure that tail isn't being clipped too early because that might become audible in the mix. you know. But I wanted to touch on, I guess, efficiency. Like, certain things have to come down to, like, you just have to make certain decisions quick. A good example of attention to detail versus, like, time management, weirdly enough, is front of house or just monitor world in general. Because you have a sound check, you have 30 minutes, and then, sure, you can mix as the show goes. But typically speaking, when you have a group in front of you and they're trying to get just signals going, and you want to make sure that you can get it nice and loud right away because you got to move on to the next group during sound check, you're trying to push like 110 decibels, 115 decibels, you know, in the audience. And you're trying to avoid feedback while also getting the best possible mix you can. Funny enough, you're making decisions that revolve around, is there resonance? Is there going to be any issues? Is the gating too strong? Is the EQ going to overexcite a certain frequency in the room? And that's going to cause another different resonance that wasn't there before. It's kind of like this balancing act that you literally just have to kind of experience. And the better you get at it over time, the faster you can move. And those little details become this like second nature. You don't really think about it too much. And that's why I've always told a lot of people, if you want to become a better engineer, do live sound for a little bit, because it teaches you to think on your feet and be quick about things. Because the moment you get feedback, you can't just let it sit there and ring. It's something you have to be very responsive to, which is actually going to help you train your ears and things of that nature to pick it up even before it starts to feedback. A little bit of resonance starts coming up, you're like, uh-oh, that's one of those tall tale signs. But it's definitely true. Like, in live audio, you don't have editing. That's not one of those attention to detail things that you don't really do there. But some things that might be there that would be there for like a recording engineer might be like positioning of mics and different source material. Trying to minimize like bleed from one mic to the next. Let's say you're doing a Nashville style recording where you got the full band and everything, you've got really nice and sensitive mics in the room, but you also have to minimize that bleed. But you also can't spend 5 of the 8 hours in the studio, you know, sitting there with the drummer trying to get the perfect mic placement. At a certain point, you just have to learn these techniques that really work well, which mics have certain tone attributes and everything, and which ones work really well for what styles recording, and just hit record. You know, you want to maximize the amount of time you're actually spending recording versus sitting there repositioning a mic, doing 10 different takes and seeing if it works out. And then let's say that that position didn't work out in the end. You spent way too much time and now you got to rearrange the mics to get a better type of recording that'll match the production better. You know, funny enough, this is why a lot of people like virtual drums lately. Like, I've noticed a lot of Nashville records getting done with like addicted drums just to minimize the time for recorded drums. And if they don't like the tones in the end.
Yeah, there's different parts of the craft, like attention to detail with like miking drums. And and room placement, there's like there that does pay off, I feel like, in the long run. But that's not like that's not for the beginner to intermediate. That's not like a decision you can make.
Yeah,
like that takes time and experience to get to the point where you know what to do. And then once you already know what to do, then it's quick and efficient.
Yeah. It's so like overhead placement alone could make the biggest difference, whether you're doing XY space pair or you're even doing, what is it called? When it's not XY, but the tails are crossing over. So you get minimal snare in your overheads. Like it completely starts rejecting the snare at that point, you know, but even those three can make the world of a difference in the sound of your recording. That stuff is like, you need some good experience. You need people to practice that with a couple times before you hit a major studio and make a final decision just on a whim.
Yeah. And I do think that's a good example of like making sure attention to detail is super important. You know, another thing too, as well, is I do think that everyone should learn how to have attention to detail. And like, because it's more important to have it and to decide that it's not appropriate to use right now versus someone who just doesn't have it, right? Just like, I don't want to say this, but like is kind of dumb, not dumb,
say the weird
obviously
thing.
Not passionate about the craft. Because like a lack of attention to detail also shows a lack of passion, a lack of fervor for the craft. And I do think that like this is one of those things where everyone that is super serious about it should have and be able to have attention to detail. And it should be a conscious decision when not to use it. Otherwise, like, so for example, the famous story of Mandy Merkwin, I just looked it up, where he mixed Kanye Stronger. It went through a ton of different mixers, never passed. And then it finally came to Manny after a ton of mixers. And he says, I found the Sound by Sound article here. Mm-hmm. And he said, in the sample, there's a ton of glitches. A ton of glitches. And so, like, the volume would cut out in that, like, so it's like, and it sounds like, I may be making this up here, but it sounds like I'm inferring that the other engineers did not take the amount of time nor attention to detail to fix those glitches, and instead tried to use, like, plugins and other RX or something like along that nature, like automatic sort of quick and easy fixes rather than taking the time. And it says Manny took the time to manually, with clip gain and volume, automate the volume drops, the volume boosts, all of the glitches to make sure that it's clean all the way through, which took dozens of hours, it sounds like, from this article.
I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of... I've heard the song before. It did not sound like there was a bunch of spiky volume. So one, good job to him and his team, because at that point they killed it. But I'm also very curious to the original sound, because I'm like, damn, how bad was it? How much work did go into it, you know?
But the point was, like, this song that became a huge hit, it was going to go to somebody else. And then Manny took the time and had the attention to detail, and that's what landed it. It became a hit song. And Manny got a boost in his career. He was already kind of big at that time, but got a bigger boost for his career. And, you know, Kanye got a great song. He's very happy with it. Larrabee got a boost in the studio recognition. You know, so it's just like, that was a moment of, like, in our case, editing, where the attention to detail and the willingness to put in 14 hours or 12 to whatever hours to make the edits for that just one track of a song, I think is a great example of, like, when you're determining when you want to put in the time for the detail. Like, you already know what you want to do, and now it's just a matter of getting it done. I do think that that's, like, an important example. And what I'm not trying to do with this episode is trying to convince any listener that attention to detail is not important, that it's not the small and little things that make a record big. But what I am trying to say is that most of us it's been drilled in by our workaholic fathers that attention to detail is probably the most important thing ever. So I'm just trying to create a balance, right? I'm projecting. But, I do think that for the sake of art, it's not always an objective, linear, again, the linear translation of emotional integrity to time spent on a song. I think that most of the time it's actually negatively correlated. The more time you spend on a song from a mixing perspective, not on an editing perspective, mixing perspective, the less likely that song is going to emotionally translate to the audience.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, I kind of want to make a note based on observation of two different cases. So one is from a producer standpoint, one's from songwriter standpoint. We actually know the songwriter, Tristan Plackey Chan, Tristan Rice. Y'all should check him out. Cool dude. But overall, so on a guitarist standpoint in a studio world, right? You walk into a session, and this has been my experience every time, like, we would hit up like a major studio, like Record Plant or something like that. You would assume that because you went to that studio and you've got a bunch of producers, you got Camper, you've got, I think, what was his name? KD or something of that nature. Obviously, I don't dive too deep in the producer world to know everybody's names, but point is, you've got a bunch of producers, everybody's working on an album, and they say, hey, I know a guitarist, I'm gonna call him over. Cool, guitar shows up. He's got one pedal board with multi-effects, like the Line 6 Helix or something of that nature, or maybe a Kemper Profiler with the pedal board, which once again, it's just a pedal board and a digital head, and their guitar. That's it. Just give him an XLR out, and that's it. That's as much attention to detail as far as the tonality of something goes, because they've probably started using presets that they know that they like and they can start with. And they know that the producer at the end of the day is going to actually manipulate that in a way that they want. Or if they don't like something, they're just going to communicate that and they can change it on the spot. In the context that we've been giving regularly throughout this episode, it's been engineering, but this applies to just about anything else. Sometimes it's more about your level of efficiency and knowing how to read the room. If you're in the room by yourself, you can take the time that you want to take, but you have to just acknowledge that at a certain point, your efficiency is dropping. And your level of creativity, which is the part that I really wanted to touch on, is also dropping. Your sense of creativity when creating something new versus mixing something new is dropping in that moment. So guitarists, most percussionists for like, you know, studio recordings and things like that, they typically just kind of take the mentality of whatever's around. And a lot of times when you listen to these classic records, the reason the U87 actually became very popular is because nobody wanted to break a U67. Nobody wanted it to be damaged. So they bought the poor man's U67, which is the U87, and let that one be the beat around studio mic. And when people ask, why'd you use an 87? A lot of times you hear, because it's what was around. I was listening to see if there was any issues, and if there was no issues, then we moved on. We were going to mix it, and I'm not saying fix it in the mix, but we didn't hear any issues to immediately attack. Now, that kept them efficient, that kept the creativity alive, and a rule I had at the studio is if you kill the vibe, you're fired. And we held true to that, and we made sure to teach that. Because at a certain point, that attention to detail versus efficiency starts working against you when you're, like DK said, paying too much attention to that detail. It's not always about every last fucking detail. Who cares if 5K is a little strong by like a dB? You can dip it down by a dB. You're okay. Move on. Don't lose that creativity. Don't lose that flow. The other side is like Tristan Rice, which he did a masterclass for us at In The Mix Studios, where he talked about how he would just get a track or like a you know, a folder, a Dropbox link, anything, of tracks, and he would just cycle through them. And then he would hear it and he'd be like, ooh, I like that one. I have an idea. I hear a melody in my head. He would immediately just start trying to track it. Him and Nico would get in the studio, just start tracking it. And once his idea was done, if the song wasn't finished, he said the likelihood of him going back to that song was very low, because he would be losing time, because he knew he was fighting a fleeting thought. He was no longer going to be working on it. So he's like, look, part of it is like your efficiency is like, are you just doing things just to do things, or are you done with it? Because he could have always tagged in another writer and say, hey, do you have any ideas to finish this off, and moved on to the next record. As a mixer, at a certain point, you have to look at a record and say, am I just making EQ changes and compression changes just because, or is it something that I've really heard? Is this something that's creatively helping, or am I just, you know, doing too much? Am I a guitarist showing up to the studio with a Fender Twin and showing up with my favorite set of strings and swapping strings because the string tone wasn't the right tone? Or, you know, are you walking into a studio with seven different guitars that are all set up, all with different options, and you can just grab one and go? You know, sometimes paying too much attention to the detail is going to slow you down. It's going to kill the creativity. It's going to kill the efficiency. And that's what we're trying to communicate that you want to avoid.
Yeah. I think it's a good idea to talk about how, now go back to the opposite sense, like attention to detail is also what makes someone be able to charge a lot and be able to show, increase the level of trust. Because at the end of the day, we've talked about this on previous episodes before, it's not just about how good you are at mixing. If you're the best mixer in the world, but the artist does not trust you and does not believe that you have a good ear, it doesn't matter.
No.
So, I will say it's not just about, so in order to build trust, you have to have and prove a sense of attention to detail. Again, if you're going to be a white glove, one-on-one custom creative service, then the more attention to detail that you have and you show them that you have, the more trust you can build, the better projects that you can have. Even, for example, have you seen the papers that were presented to Pepsi when they changed their logo? And how they convinced the board to change their logo and the reasons why they should change it. Dude, they go into like physics and like the exact degrees of the curves of the bends and the exact like and all of the spiritual and historical meaning of every single color, bend, and curve of it and why it's superior
to
the
Pepsi logo?
Of the fucking Pepsi logo.
Oh, I should look into it. I'm gonna look it up.
You should look into it. It's
the most recent one.
It is ridiculous. I mean, it's just a simple change. The original Pepsi logo to the new Pepsi logo. It was just a change, but they spent millions of dollars on that simple change that anybody could that doesn't take a significant amount of skill. It was the attention to detail, planning, editing, planning for the change, not the change itself. Does that make sense? So it's like, it could have been where they made the change and then like a music theory person does, they analyze it after the change is made and they give reason to it after the song is done, after the changes were made. We can't tell. I don't know the exact story that far. But one of the things I was thinking about while you're talking is one, to reemphasize the importance of attention to detail, being detail oriented. But I'm trying to think of other ways to show that. For example, things that you should have attention to detail always, and you should almost always spend the time to get it right and not worry about efficiency. Like we said, editing is one of those things, which includes vocal tuning. Get your fucking vocals right.
Oh my God.
If you're making a pop song or anything near pop, those vocals need to be perfect. And I do not say that word lightly. I never say perfect. I usually am not a big black and white kind of sentiment guy. This is one of those things that's black and white. If you're making a pop song, don't even waste anyone's time by making a vocal anything less than perfect. Take the time to edit it. It's not a skill. It's not a skill. It's kind of a skill thing because like Melodyne and like knowing how to use your DAW. But it's not so much a skill thing. It's a time and effort thing. Don't make your vocals sound cheap by making it sound like you didn't put any time and effort into editing them. Okay? It's not a talent thing. It's not about you being a good singer or not. It's about you taking the time to edit your fucking vocals. All right?
Yeah.
That's something I'm like... Just take the time. Another thing that I think you should take the time on is active and constant communication with your clients before, during, and after the project. Hey, I'm planning on working on your project on the 12th of August, right? The 12th of August, I'm planning on having a V1 for you there, give or take a day or two. And I'll tell you exactly when I start and I'll tell you my progress at the end of the day. And I'll send you questions. I'll make sure they download the track and open up a session and make sure that you sent me the stems correctly before the day of the session, the mix day. Make sure that everything is good. I'm letting you know that I'm starting the project today. I'm letting you know that today I wasn't able to finish the song as expected, but I was able to do this, this, and this. I'm feeling really good about this. Hey, I'm sending you the V1. Please make sure to leave notes. Having attention to detail, being detail oriented and with communication, I think shows a lot of integrity and is socially important, commercially important to showcase attention to detail through communication. I think that is absolutely important. Even things like when you send out invoices, how the invoices look, does it look like the generic Google? What color is it, like plum blue and plum red?
Oh, yeah.
Color? Yeah. Does it look like the default data? Or does it look like you actually spent the time with these
and
emails?
Is your logo on it?
Yeah. Even in your emails, like, do you actually capitalize the first letter of the sentence and use punctuation marks? Do you spell the words correctly? Do you take the time to edit your emails? I think that's...
Is your payment methods there?
Is it easy? Yeah. Does it seem like when I work with you, does it seem like you figured the shit out? That it's efficient and it's the detail orientation, the details that you've got, every step of the process is very efficient and effective and you've got it there, got it down. I think that creates trust. What doesn't necessarily add to the project is like the exact 0.0, the tenth of a degree of the ratio of the compressor or like the threshold of the compressor. Oh, should I be hitting -3.2 dBs of gain reduction or -3 dBs of gain reduction? That doesn't change.
Detail doesn't matter.
Like probably doesn't. Probably yeah. doesn't. I mean, audibly, if it does, yeah.
Audibly and
if it,
speaking.
If it does, you shouldn't be spending an hour on that single, you know, on that little yeah. thing there.
Oh my God. If you spend an hour on a single digit difference of compression, I mean,
yeah, wow. Crazy, right?
Wow. Yeah.
That being said, yeah.
Like, I'll put it this way. There is a little bit of compression on my mic. I'm using my Tube Tech. I am not monitoring it or anything. I literally did a recording. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, that balance is cool.
Yeah. I think attention to detail and like even something as dumb as like using your Instagram account or your website, your email letterhead or like your email like signature at the bottom, taking pictures of yourself for work. That's something that we talked about, creating a business that is personal versus creating a commercial business. We have an episode on that in the past. Why it's important to put pictures of yourself up on your website as a mixer or as a producer. We've talked about that in the past. Attention to detail, making sure that if you're inviting clients to the studio, making sure that your room is fucking vacuumed, that you have great cable management, that it looks good, that you've taken the time to make your studio aesthetically pleasing and that you've taken the time to clean up before the customer comes. That is a big part of, I think, going to create trust for the mixer. And between the mixer
professional,
and the client.
You know.
Yeah. What doesn't, again, is dipping 3.2 dBs at a 0.8 Q at 567 instead of 562 hertz on the EQ. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like
attention to detail matters if you're talking about treating your space. Maybe don't spend money blindly at that point. But
science behind like acoustic panels, right?
Yeah. Like right now I'm trying to solve for 60 hertz in my room. That shit is like +7, which with room tuning, you can always take away. But something you can't do is if it's negative. You're at that point, you're boosting signal into your speakers. At that point, you might be clipping your amps or your converters at a certain point to push a certain bit of information. But that's where it's like, you know what? Call an acoustician. In my case, I like talking to Gerhard. I think Gerhard's great. He can also calibrate, different software for you and all that kind of stuff manually. But that's one of those things where it's like, at a certain point, you also have to make a decision of when something is in your role. You know, because let's say that you're opening a studio, you do want to pay attention to this. This is one of those details that's going to matter because it's going to be permanently in the space. You don't change it with a plugin. I mean, there's, what is it? Sonarworks. I don't know why I was blanking on it. But yeah, Sonarworks exists, but it's not a permanent solution, nor is it an actual, solution that is intended to be of permanent use. You're still supposed to treat your space and you're still supposed to take care of your reverb times and all that. But this is one of those things, like if you take care of that early on, it can actually help you be a little more efficient and hear more details a little more easily. So you can actually maximize the time you spend on the actual work without having to fight yourself on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I'm just smart enough to be able to see that there's like a deeper level to this that I'm missing out on, but not smart enough to be able to properly articulate it, grasp it, and expand on it.
That's pretty smart of you.
No.
And think about it. Like, it's you just said you basically describe the Munson curve where you're like, you're intelligent enough to know that it goes deeper, but you are also...
Dunning-Kruger
Munson curve. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my God. I'm over here putting so the hearing difference.
But the point is...
Yeah.
And that's a little frustrating that I can't quite get to that next level that I'm feeling, but I can't... Anyway. But the point is, what I don't want to do with this episode is I don't want to make people feel like, give them ammunition to allow their laziness to thrive. For example, when I am not paying attention to the exact decimal point of the EQ on the compressor, it's not a move of laziness. It is a move of integrity, understanding that that's not what's going to make the difference and that paying attention to emotions will.
Yep.
It's a very, it's not a lazy decision. It's a tactic. It's a decision that I made on purpose, knowing the desired outcome. And at no point, if you desire to choose efficiency and emotion over attention to detail, and taking the time to get it right, at no point should that decision be based on laziness. I don't want to say at no point. I don't want to be absolute about it because I think there is going to be a line.
I was going to say, maybe the idea is laziness already has a very distasteful connotation to it. So maybe not as out of laziness, but out of efficiency would be...
You should have at least thought about it. Because I do feel like some laziness... creates better systems. So you figure out ways to make better systems and become more efficient. Laziness leads to efficiency, which is efficiency doesn't always mean that there's going to drop the ball. It means that you've automated some processes.
Wasn't it Bill Gates that said, he's like, I like hiring lazy people. They learn how to get things done faster.
I don't remember exactly who said that, but that's the truth. Yeah. So the idea is like, but there's something about this where I want to make sure, I can't quite articulate it, and I don't want to use blanket statements. I don't want to be absolute in my terms, because only a Sith deals in absolutes. But I want to be clear that there is a difference between laziness and being efficient on purpose.
Yeah.
I can't quite articulate why. I can't articulate exactly when it is that is the case, but I do think that if you're governing yourself, if you are watching over your own moves, and if you're aware, if you have any sense of self-awareness, I think you as the listener, as the creator, will be able to determine where that line is for you in that specific instance. Yeah. And I do think that in exchange for choosing to be more efficient in one place, I think that you can still show and build trust to clients by having the attention to detail in other places like communication, emails, your finances. For example, I hate to say this. This is a little bit judgmental, but for example, a lot of people are really good at hiding it. Some people are not hiding it, but maybe a great person that's attention to detail, someone that I trust, is someone like I want to. Oh man, hold on. Let me determine if this is appropriate, because this could be.
Tell on them. Say the weird thing.
No.
Well, just to buy you time.
No. I'm just okay. So I want to, at least the time that I'm taking, the pause that I'm making here, what I'm not trying to do is make like an ignorant statement, but I'm trying to say this potentially hurtful thing in a very hurtful way in order to bring attention to this. Because what I'm about to do show or like bring attention to is not something that is entirely helpful to humankind. And I think that it's kind of hurtful. It's emotionally distressing to think about, but is undeniably something that is happening subconsciously among most random strangers. When I'm determining who to hire, right? Things like, are they well-dressed? Unfortunately, is going to impact my trust on them. Right?
I think that's actually
more common. Yeah, you specifically mentioned that like weight and like someone that is like obese, looks yeah. obese and looks like they're, you've said that, you immediately like lose trust in that person, which I, as long as like, I think that's kind of weird to talk about out loud and but, there's big shame culture on talking about that. Yeah. But I think that is an undeniable human aspect that I think can lose trust.
Yeah. And it's, even to explain that one, the funny thing is like, I totally get where you're coming from. Cause even on my thing, it's like, it's the big, it's one of the biggest reasons I started going back to the gym. It wasn't because I was unhappy with my shape, but I was unhappy that I allowed myself to get to a certain point and say, I'm perfectly okay with this. Cause that speaks a lot about what else are you okay with. It's the things that you do every day, say what you do, even in the professional settings, right? If at home you're very dirty, you're misorganized and all that kind of stuff, you're likely like that at work.
Okay, yeah.
So the funny thing is like me wanting to lose weight, I even said it out loud and I've told other people where it's like, I cannot ask for another person to take me seriously if I don't take myself seriously.
That's like, yeah, though, that's great. I cannot expect anyone to take me seriously if I don't take myself seriously. That's a great quote. But the reason why I'm very careful with bringing this up is because what I'm not trying to do is make you feel shame as a listener. I don't want to make you feel, add to the emotional distress, but I do want to emphasize that no matter how much we learn to accept each other and how much love we bring into the world, it is part of human nature. Bullying will never, ever stop. Okay? Mm-hmm. This unfair, quite frankly, unfair judgment will likely never end. It is not possible, nor is it healthy to assume that it can end, right? Like, it is, I think it's more important to take responsibility and take yourself seriously. And, you know, and not just that, like, we've talked about, like, even the idea of, like, if you... You know what really
grinds
like,
my gears?
No. You know what really shows confidence? Like, this is something small, but like, if you're out of debt and you're financially stable, people can tell. Like, not like that. I need to be careful on how I say that. Not like I can tell you're out of debt, but I mean, like, when you're financially secure, that can attribute to how you act, the confidence that you have when you act around other people.
Yeah,
not directly.
Totally.
It's one of the very many variables that can, but, and that's like a potentially a discipline thing. We can always blame the government, the economy system that we're unable to do whatever. But the point is, if you take control, if you pay attention to that, you have the attention to detail to that and try, make the effort to figure things out. If you take yourself seriously in that perspective, other people will take your stuff seriously too. So I do think those sort of things, which can in very small increments affect how a customer perceives you and affects how much a customer trusts you, those very small things is arguably more important than to the exact tenth of a decimal your EQ and compression settings are.
Yep.
That's the point. All right. And I do think, like, especially for something as subjective as what we do, like, for example, if a heart surgeon is really fucking good at their job, but they're like really unhealthy, they smoke all the time, they're obese, like, that doesn't matter because they're still the best in the country objectively. But what we do is art. What we do is art. The only difference between someone liking me as a mixer more and someone liking someone that is equally as skilled, right? But potentially equally as skilled, but has significantly less attention than me, is not even the effort. It's about the trust that we've created. Yep. It could be the fact that, like, this guy runs like crazy. He's very disciplined. He's obviously knows what he's talking about on the podcast. It's the PR stuff, you know. It's and I will say this over and over again: the difference between someone that's charging and making a lot of money from producing and mixing versus the kid that is not making anything from it, it's not skill. It's very little skill-based difference. Obviously, there is a threshold of how good you need to be, but I find that a lot of people are beyond that threshold and are still haven't been able to figure it out. It's if you're past that threshold, it's not a skill thing. It's a branding difference. It's a branding difference.
Yep.
And so it's like the guy that charges $2,000 per mix versus can't even get away with charging $200 per mix, it's probably more of a branding difference. You have creative, subjective value in your name, in your offering, and you've convinced people that you have attention to detail. You've convinced people that you do great work when there's other people that do just as good of work as you, right? And here's the thing, too. It's like, we need to be careful as this, is because if I truly do believe that, like, when I do something and it, like, there's been songs that are doing really well that I spent very little time on. And if I was any less experienced, I would feel bad how little time I spent on how much money versus the amount of money that I made versus how big the artist is, right? I would feel bad if I was less experienced. But with experience, I know that it's part of my expertise is understanding when not to do something as well. So like there's also that conflict, the potential conflict of like feeling guilty that you're not doing enough when you understand how much more you could do. But I think that that takes skill to understand that it is skillful to not do something as well when it comes to the art of mixing as well. Sorry, getting a little bit of tangent here. I need to get focused back on the thesis. Lou, any thoughts on my rant?
No, it's actually pretty on point because the reality is exactly that. And I've talked about it before many times. The main reason that I've been able to get to high places is because of the trust I built with people and because the way we move. It's your level of professionalism, your level of efficiency. And once again, going back to the topic, the attention to detail put into all of it at the same time. That detail doesn't just surround the record, but when it comes to the difference of why we get hired versus one to the next, yeah, it's the attention to detail of ourselves, our own brand. You know, what is it that we're pushing out and stuff like that? Like for today, I don't know if you actually saw what I posted on my story, but I thought it was pretty funny. At midnight, I just put, it's my wife's birthday today, so don't bother me. Whatever it is, it can wait until she's done enjoying her day. That's just nice. Me. My brand is, hey, listen, when it comes to me and my wife, when it comes to me and my family, don't bother me. I don't care. I really don't care. I've let my clients know that I have active projects with, that I will not be available for the day. This is her day. But if you don't communicate that and you just leave people on red, you're an asshole, dude. That's what you are. That's that little bit of detail that you could have given somebody ahead of time just so they at least know that you're not going to be available that day. You could at least send a text instead of just leaving them on red and things like that. That would probably get me fired from any project faster than any EQ curve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, another thing that you're really good at, Lou, with attention to detail is when you're designing studios.
Yeah.
Right? When you design studios, you create a 3D render of the space with the exact dimensions.
Just
I mean, you're measuring down to quarter inches or less value, eighth inches, 16th of an inch values.
Up to 1/64th of an inch is typically my level of differential.
Yeah, and with that sort of skill, imagine if you only paid attention to 1/4 of an inch and how like none of the acoustic panels would be that tight. It'd be a little bit sloppy, right? And you don't want that, right? You want to have attention to detail. So, I mean, obviously...
Yeah, with the Zeus Network project, we literally mapped every single acoustic panel's position. So when it came to installation day, we looked at the render. We saw what the gaps and everything were in between. We put it to the wall and it came out exactly like the render.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That being said, even within art, there is a spectrum. There's probably a gradient of value for attention to detail versus, it depends on the art. Like if you're a hyper-realistic painter, then attention to detail is everything, right?
Yeah.
If you're an abstract artist, then it's nothing.
If you're Picasso, it doesn't matter where the nose goes.
Yeah, if anything, right? So it's like, so there are obviously balances to everything here. But I do think that when it comes to mixing, which is more of an art form, attention to detail is important, but it's... You have to understand the value of efficiency because efficiency helps you to retain being quick and efficient helps you to retain your taste and original vision. And every minute longer that you spend on a song is potentially vision lost. Mm-hmm. So be careful with that. That being said, everything around mixing, emailing, communication, personal presentation, lifestyle, PR, branding, articulation, being cultured, knowing who other artists and producers are in the industry, going to these events, presenting yourself well, dressing well for these events. These are all things that you should have attention to detail on. Designing your studio, the shoes in the background. And maybe I should change that out because I'm not really doing hip hop audience anymore, you know? So it's like, things like that I do think matter. And it's what I'm not trying to do is make every neurotic artist start to overthink and overanalyze everything. But I do think that when it comes to the actual art, I think it is important to keep it a cathartic activity rather than something that is overstressed.
Yep.
Making music should be fun and cathartic. Cathartic is stress relieving, relaxing, easy to do emotionally, right? It should just be able to flow through you.
With that
it should be something that you overstress.
There is practice before you can get to such a point. I do believe in that. For instance, something that's very cathartic for me would be woodworking, which is actually like I would say 80% of my furniture for studio related things. Like I built myself 3 custom racks that are fully finished, fully sanded. No metal was used outside of the wheels. Everything is completely wood dowels and held up by wood of some sort, which is cool. I found that very relaxing, very time-consuming. But there's at a certain point, you've learned how to use the tools. You've learned how to measure things, how to check for these little details to where doing that is more second nature. And it's something where as you're going and doing more later on in life, you can kind of start speeding through this. It's not that you're speeding through it out of laziness, but at a certain point, you start realizing that that 1/64th of an inch is a level of deviation that is okay. That 3.1 ratio versus 3.2 ratio is okay. It doesn't actually matter that much. Now, if I was building something on an engineering level and it has to be, what is it called? Zero tolerance, where as soon as you put them together, you can't actually see a gap, then we're talking a whole different ballgame. That level of detail does take time and does require time. Because yeah. It's zero tolerance. But in art, what is zero tolerance?
Yeah. I'm really stuck on the thing that you said, which is
Pokemon
if you want
is
people
cool.
to take your art serious, you have to take yourself serious. What was the quote?
Oh, I can't ask anybody to take me seriously if I'm not willing to take myself seriously.
Yeah, I do think that that's like really important. Like if you want people to take your subjective art seriously, then you have to take yourself seriously.
Now, with that said, a six pack
does
not. A six pack is as impressive as it can get, which is, you really put that much fucking time into your diet, into everything. You probably are very structured in your personal health life, but that doesn't mean you're the best engineer out there. Don't expect me to suddenly respect you more just because you have a six pack, but that does tell me that you have a little more of a systemized lifestyle and you probably do take certain things more seriously. Doesn't mean that you're necessarily better at it, but you started putting your routine into action.
Dude, yeah, I don't think that like hiring someone for a mixer because they're really fit, I don't think that's like a positive thing necessarily, yeah. But it's at least a neutral thing.
Yeah.
Right. For some people, maybe it's a positive thing. I really look up to this guy's discipline. So it's like, whatever. But most people, it's at least a neutral thing. It's not important. But like, if you're not keeping yourself together, if it obviously you look unhealthy, then that is potentially a negative thing. Probably not. And not to most people. But it is undeniably something that can be seen as negative to some people. So just like, why would you even risk it? That's the point, right? Like, why would you even risk it? Take yourself seriously. Like, don't allow other people that are... It's impossible to stop, no matter how much we educate the people, no matter how much we increase awareness. People are still going to be dumb. People are still going to be racist. They're going to be still be going to be bigots out there. Why would you even allow other people to use that for you? Like, take yourself seriously and other people will take you more seriously. Like, I really think that that's a really good point. And taking yourself overly serious is dangerous as well. As much as it is important to take on discipline, rigidity, to take on social acceptance and like being aware of how much you need to change for society. It's also important to let go and like allow yourself to be yourself as well.
Yeah.
But I do think someone that like dresses sloppy and like looks really cool and artistic, I think that most of the time for the people that you can retain respect is like, it's on purpose. Like they're very artistic. That's why they got look crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, like people don't disrespect Einstein because he's got crazy hair. You know what I'm saying? Like it's, I don't think you should take yourself.
He looks like a mad scientist, but with a smile.
But I mean, you know, the point is like, I think there's also a line where you can take yourself way too serious, that it can yeah. lead to not feeling like you're enough. And that's not the point. That's not the point. That's also dangerous. And that's a whole nother conversation. It's a balance between both sides. And I know that Westerners are very afraid of the ambiguity gray area, the ambiguous gray area between left and right. Americans really want black and white. They want what's right, what's wrong.
Okay. I was about to say, like, left and right, like, in general, like, I don't know whether to go left or right. Just walk. Yeah,
that was not a political, that was not a political statement. Yeah, like, it's okay to figure this out and where the lines are for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, I think it's more about bringing awareness into this idea of, like, coming back and going back into self-acceptance, but also being aware enough to seek more discipline, seek more education, seek the betterment of the craft. I will always, if anything, this is a black and white absolute statement that I will make. I will not allow us or any other influencers to lower the standard. We will always try to raise the standard of what is acceptable. That being said, I don't think we should gatekeep, and I don't think we should make it harder to hit the standard. I think we should increase education along with raising the standard.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, this was pretty, I don't know. I feel very, quite frankly, I feel very unsatisfied with the way that we articulated this episode. I feel like there's a lot missing. I think there's like another level that we didn't quite hit, things that we didn't talk about.
We'll just have to hit a round two.
Maybe eventually, or at least bring it up. I don't think a whole nother episode needs to be dedicated to this. But there's something about this episode that's bothering me. Whatever it is, maybe you have comments. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave a comment of your own thoughts of how you balance this out.
Apple?
Yeah, your own, even on, you can't do comments on Apple Podcasts.
Oh.
I don't think. I think Spotify you can. On Spotify, if you listen to a podcast on Spotify, it says, how did you feel about this episode? There's like a little survey that you can click on. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. What do you think I'm missing? What is that next level or something that I'm failing to articulate? Let me know. That being said, if you like technical episodes of the podcast, exactly how to use a compressor and how to use an EQ, different techniques for mixing and mastering, producing, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to unlock over 200 episodes of the exclusive episodes. Not only do they come out twice a week, but there's a backlog of them. And if you pay $4 a month or $40 a year, you unlock the entire catalog. It's great. And there's two new episodes every single week. So thank you so much for that, for all of our current subscribers. Once again, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. All right, cool. Any other thoughts? Closing thoughts, Lou?
Yeah. As much as we said, honestly, just still focus on the creativity. Just talk about, you know, honestly, just keep focused on actual efficiency. We're not trying to downplay like learning process. Learning process is going to take time. And if you want to take more time on it, that's totally cool. But try to learn to be a little more efficient and what that means for you and your process. For us, that means sometimes we're not looking at an exact detail, but it's because we're listening to the output that we're getting from something and seeing if it aligns with our goals. And once you get to that point with your stuff, you know, hey, we don't think about how we hold the spoon anymore, right? But as a kid, we used to be slapping that shit across our face looking like some kind of weird milk-covered baby. At a certain point, it just becomes second nature. So, you know, as you're learning, don't worry about the amount of time you're spending. Just focus on getting faster with it so that you can increase your dollars per hour when charging a fixed rate for services that you offer.
Perfect. Even with all of this debate and thought and stuff, I do think for mixing, you should, if you don't offer any other services, if you only offer mixing, charge per project. If you are a recording engineer who can offer mixing on the side, this is really overly complicated. We've had an episode on this on the past. Keep charging per hour during the session. If you're mixing at the end of a session, don't say like, hey, stop the session and I charge this much per project afterwards. Let's just keep going, have them pay hourly for your mix. Mm-hmm. But if you are only doing mixing or only doing mastering, then it's standard to charge per project, per song, per album or whatever. So on that note, that's just a small little note there. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.